On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York and the host of On the Ground. And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is On the Ground. And yes, this is September, a very, very special month. You're going to have a lot of news that you can use, but we'll start right out by telling you that October 2nd, so gear up for it, is the United Nations International Day of Older Persons. You've heard about it here on the Ground. You heard an entire dissertation on why we need human rights for elders and older persons on our last show with Margaret Young. So please tune in to On the Ground. And you can attend a UNIDAP virtually or in person at the United Nations. Simply go to the website of the NGO COA, NGO Committee on Aging -New York.org, and get your invitation. It is always free. Now, I'm extremely happy to bring to you something really different than we have done from the beginning of this show. We have with us today two people who have made a huge difference in creating coalitions around the world, around the Americas, with firefighting organizations. Lucia Villarino Fiore, I'll just say that, and she is the executive director of OAF, OAF, Organization of American Firefighters, and its vice president, Philip Stittleberg, and he is the vice president of OAF. I'm going to see if I can say Organización Bomberos de Americas. So here we go. Why is this different? I will tell you. Because we have always been speaking to organizations that are looking at individual rights of folks that have been marginalized one way or another. This is our very first NGO discussion with a group that brings other groups together, where their constituents are other organizations that are powerful organizations and yet need a lot of support, and they get it from each other. So the issue of collaboration, which is one of the big, big principles of GNEC, is something we're certainly going to speak about. So first, let's get a description of this organization. Lucia, you are on. You are the director, the executive director of OAF. Tell us how the organization began and what's the mission behind it.
Thanks, Adrienne. Good morning, good afternoon, good night to everyone here. We are very happy of being here with you today. OBA was born in 2006. There was 5 founding members, which were fire services, that said, okay, we need to collaborate because disasters start the cycle of poverty in our nations. We are in Latin America and the Caribbean, and we need to better develop our capacities to prevent and respond to them. So that's how our organization started. OBA is the biggest international cooperation organization between fire services. And our aim is to professionalize the service of firefighters in Latin America and the Caribbean. You have to know that in many of our countries, fire services are volunteer services, are community-based services. And we hope that through doing so, we will help our nations to be more secure and resilient.
Well, a fantastic mission, and it's certainly working, very much needed, a life-saving mission. So let's say hello to Phil for a moment here. And Phil, I'm going to set the stage. Believe it or not, I lived in a community in the state of New Jersey where only volunteer firemen were. We had no fire department. I know it's hard to believe because you think of New Jersey as so urban, and you are from Wisconsin. So question, what did you have to teach? You've been a firefighter professional and a volunteer. What have you found in your challenges? And I guess I would also say, because of the organization, your success in imparting new learning and learning yourself.
I think that the major challenge that I've experienced over the years is one of time. Not my own time necessarily, although that's certainly a factor too. But the time of the people who are trying to address. New Jersey is not unlike most of the states in the United States that you just mentioned. Actually, about 70% of all the firefighters in the United States are indeed volunteers. So it's a very, very large group, about 800,000
yes.
of us.
Very surprising, isn't it, to yeah, most yeah. people and, listening? Sure.
And that's a little known fact. And interestingly enough, throughout OBA, that tends to be the case internationally also, is that the volunteer sector is the predominant a provider of fire protection to a major portion of the various countries. So the challenge I have found is in being able to deliver what the firefighters need to know in a time frame, both in terms of hours and minutes spent, and in terms of flexibility of delivery. In other words, making it available when they can do it so that they can learn what they need to know on the schedule that they can accommodate.
This is a very important thing when you're dealing with volunteers everywhere. So I'm going to actually throw that over to Lucia now. This is a volunteer effort, as Phil says, in most places. How did you get the organizations themselves to collaborate with you so that they would accept your learning and then learn from each other as well? How do you outreach to add also new firefighting organizations?
Well, that's a great question, Adrian. I think for a start, fire services are eager to learn. In Latin America, there's a very big gap in information and knowledge. Many of the fire trainings or the latest news and information is in English. So they are all the time reaching to new bridges and opportunities to be better, to serve better, and to learn how to help better their communities. From our side of the buy, let's say, from our view, we try to reach every fire department and every fire service in the Latin America and the Caribbean. We have a strategic plan that we work in with every national delegate to get to know all the fire services or the biggest fire services that might be looking for an answer like our organization. And we reach out directly. We many times try to visit or send someone that is closer to there. Luckily, in the latest years, OBA, Organización de Bomberos Americanos, has become bigger. So people get to know us through our social networks. And we were starting to see that role in the inverse way. And fire services are reaching directly to us. But in the beginning, it was a very, very handcrafted job of investigating the fire service in every country.
Phil, let me throw this to you now. So Lucia gave us a very good idea. She said two magic words. One was eager to learn. That was one. And the other was social media, right? So let's yes. start with you with the eager to learn. I had the privilege of being in Brazil during the Christmas vacation. And I went to the favelas. And in those favelas, I was again, blown away by the artists, by some of the beautiful churches there that nobody ever mentions, and the wonderful people. But I would assume this is a fire nightmare. So you must be teaching different things to different organizations under different circumstances in which they are firefighting. You just give us an example of what they might be learning.
Well, one of the things that's a major challenge typically for most volunteers, since they are in rural parts of the country, and that's true not just in the U.S., but throughout all of OBA, is simply establishing water supply. Mm-hmm. It's not a situation where you pull up to a fire hydrant and you've got water. So establishing a water supply itself is a problem. Also, for many, just the travel distance involved. And that's true even in the United States and some of the Western states in particular, but certainly even much more in some of our Southern, South America countries. The travel distance to the call and the roads over which they must pass can be a major problem. Also, you mentioned many older buildings and we all remember the fire in Notre Dame in Paris a few years ago. Tremendously, the 1,000-year-old very important building, but presented tremendous challenges because of the way it was constructed. And that's true in many of the older cities, where many of the older, particularly, tends to be churches frequently. are of very ancient construction and present some very serious challenges in terms, first of all, of trying to attack a fire, and second of all, in terms of the imminence of structural collapse in those buildings.
So when we come back, we're going to throw this over to Lucia, because I want to ask about that social media. Here we have Phil outlining for us water supply issues, distance from the site of the fire issues, materials that could be burning, old materials. Again, I'm a veteran traveler, been to Cambodia recently and seen homes on stilts. I can't even imagine. They just put a road in, Phil. They just put a road in to be able to firefight. So we come back. We're going to talk to both of you about social media and other ways that you've reached out to these organizations that our listeners could use, regardless of their mission and regardless of where they were. So don't you guys go away. And now news you can use. I don't know if you know everything that GNEC does, but it's important news to you. So please take a look. It's a very simple website. It's GNEC.NGO, not .org, .NGO. And what will you find there? You'd be surprised. Number one, you will find a way to access almost 40,000 courses free of charge. Better yet, do you have a course? Is there something that you would like to teach other NGOs? Well, you can apply to have that placed on there free, and we will teach you how to create that course. Big deal. Next, you will also discover our hackathons. We have prizes. We just finished up the 2023 hackathon to young folks who really have solutions for world change. What else will you find there? Well, soon we're going to have a directory where you will be able to put in the information so that all of our 1,500 to 2,000 NGOs can find you. And of course, you can subscribe there to the newsletter, where you'll be getting reports. But better yet, do you have something to announce in our newsletter? Well, simply go right there to gnec.ngo, and you will see our editorial standards. And finally, you want to be on this show. Yes, you want to be on this show. So go there, take a look at On the Ground, and you can personally email me, adrianegberg@gmail.com, and you'll find the full spelling of the name right there on gnec.ngo. NGO. And now we go back to our terrific guests, and we're talking about firefighting and its challenges, and who better to talk with but those who are the leaders, executive director, and vice president of the Organization of American Firefighters. We're speaking with Philip Sittelberg, who is the VP, and Lucia Villarino Fiore. Just like that name is like an opera, just the name. So let's go back to you, Lucia. You did mention, you said social media. How has that changed the input ability for others to reach you, the outreach ability for you, and how are you using social media?
Well, social media has become an indispensable tool. Of course, it has also changed how the fire services work, because now we have like tapes and recordings of everything happening in real time. But in our organization and for us, it has been a huge step forward. We have a special program, which is called our OVA Virtual Academy. And through this online platform, we train for free firefighters from all over the world. We have over 300,000 students there. And this program itself has been a huge growth for our social media reach also. So you were saying before about sharing strategies that other NGOs can reach to or can use in order to, yes, for example, reach more audience, reach other institutions to grow their media impact. And I would say that if you offer something of value to your community, in our case, it's our OVA Virtual Academy, people will get to you because, and I stand by that, people is eager to learn, people is eager to connect with some other folks that share the same passion. So for us, I would say social media has been great in reaching other institutions and making our network work growth. But I would say that the factor that made the success was the combination of the social media with a program for the community that was free and that was also beautiful. So we have something to give to that people coming to us through the social media so they can learn about us and maybe then engage formally.
You know, I do need to ask you about language, and because you're talking about education and these webinars and so on. So Phil or Lucia want to chime in on this. You have Caribbean, you have a variety of types of Spanish, you have English speaking, maybe even more. So how do you deliver this education, and how do you deal with the language issues?
Well, you're absolutely right. Language is a major challenge for us. Doing the translation can be kind of tricky. But just as an example of the impact of social media and the potential that it entails, in the U.S. we have something called the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, and NFPA creates standards for firefighters, among other things. One of our standards is a fire safety officer. On the fire ground, we have to designate a safety officer to be in charge of, as the name would imply, making sure things are done in a safe manner. We were able to prepare a Spanish language translation of that document and then deliver it through our OBA Virtual Academy. And just to give you an idea of the impact of these things, the program is open for 30 days, and in that 30 days, we trained over 25,000 firefighters.
Wow, impressive.
And social media kind of tends to, you know, feed on itself also with the shares and the likes, that sort of thing. And this course I'm describing is a good example of that, because as students were completing the course, they were taking pictures of their completion certificates and posting them online. Right. They were so proud of them. And that, of course, got the information out to others. So, you know, the language barrier is difficult and time consuming. I guess the bottom line there is it can be overcome.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. I will say that even this show, we're looking into transcribing, and we are finding that there's a lot of flaws in transcription. So it is a lot of work. I do want to warn people they need a little bit of funding for it if they're going to use a translation organization of great merit, less funding if they're going to use one of these automated services. So Phil, which do you use? How do you do the translation?
The translations we did in that case were actually done by a person that we retained for that purpose that was skilled in a couple of things. One, Spanish and English, obviously, but also has some familiarity with technical writing and translation, which is not as simple as just a conversational translation.
So I have a suggestion for this, because I'm grappling with it for this very show, and I've discovered that particularly our Ageless Traveler show, which is something that I do, and that is not to use an automated service, but to do exactly what you've done. Get a real live person. And if you do have a funding issue, you probably can look at something like Upwork or Fiverr. And at least it's an individual, not a machine. We love AI, but it goes just so far when it comes to understanding firefighting, let's say. Okay. Now,
yes,
That's certainly
true, and particularly true if the field you get into is technical. Where obviously there are specialized terms involved and things like that don't translate easily.
Now, when we come back, we'll take a little bit of a news you can use break. And when we come back, I want to throw this over to Lucia again for a question about creating a community. And how much do the folks that take your courses and bond with you also bond with each other and crosstalk even when you're not around, whether that has taken off and whether that's part of your mission now. So don't you go anywhere. And now, news you can use. News you can use is that there is a new prize in town. It started only a couple of years ago by an NGO, and it's called the Earth Prize. And you can take a look at theearthprize.org. I had the privilege of being in Los Angeles for the celebration called Gratitude of the Earth Prize. And we will be having the mentors of the teens that come up with special solutions to difficult earth and environmental problems on our show. And we're always looking for really interesting NGOs that are doing something that they can share, not only their own story, but as we're hearing on the show today, how you can use what they've learned. So take a look at theearthprize.org. I was blown away by these teenagers that created things like a way to save water in laundry, when you do the laundry, like creating plastic from watermelon seeds. Yes, you heard that correctly. And so much more. One of the things I did not know was that 60% of food waste does not come from retail stores and what we don't eat. It comes from disease on the farm. And so one of the groups, one of the winners of the Earth Prize, created a way to early detect insect disease so that it can more quickly, be taken care of. And this is making a huge difference to farmers actually all over the world. So you can be inspired by these folks. That's the Earth Prize. Okay, we are back. So Lucia, we were talking about the great job that you're doing. 25,000 people, Phil told us, on just one of your educational offerings, and that's the organizations to you. What about the organizations to each other? Are you finding sort of a groundswell of them speaking and educating each other?
Yes, we are, and that's actually something we are very proud of. Just to mention some examples, Phil told you about people posting on social media their certificates of completion for our trainings. But also we've seen pictures of people gathering in places that they don't have too much resources and maybe don't all of them have the internet connection they need. People gather just with one computer to see the virtual training, and that's creating community. We have WhatsApp groups in which people that attended our virtual activities or live activities have shared their contacts and keep on sending news on firefighting and papers for everyone to share. Right now, we also are promoting with a lot of effort and with a lot of activity our gender committee. And for example, a few weeks ago, I was very happy to learn that two institutions from Fire Services of Latin America have shared their harassment and abuse prevention policies. And that ended up in one more fire service with this type of policy installed. And those connections, which are made through OVA, are growing in their own ways. And that's something we are very happy always to hear, because we feel our impact can be much higher to what we can achieve by our own. Because every fire service that now is part of the network of OVA is also an ambassador, and it's open to collaborate and eager to help others. So I would say that creating community, of course, we have something in our side, which is that they all share the same passion, the same work, the same fire for service, let's say. But having created those spaces and making those connections work is also part of our mission.
Well, this is very inspiring because, you know, any NGO, no matter how well funded, can only do so much. But when it becomes a groundswell and their constituents, whether individuals or organizations, begin to support each other, well, then you know you have something that will last forever. So I'm going to ask Phil two really basically sounds like small questions, but it's the questions we get all the time. One of those is this. Lucia mentioned WhatsApp. How did you choose that? Are you also having a Facebook group? Is there another kind of campus or other group? In other words, what are you asking people to join? That is one technical question. And the other one is, what do they have to show you for you to let them in to the group? What is there a questionnaire? Is there requirements to be part of OBA?
Well, first of all, we haven't or don't necessarily select or promote any specific social media platform. And I think that's part of the advantage is that we appear on a number of them, which significantly increases our coverage, obviously. In terms of what goes on there, we like to post a lot of the information that's relevant to the programs we're dealing with at the current time. But it's amazing how those sorts of things tend to feed on themselves then when participants start to talk about what they're doing in their own departments or what's happening in their region of the country. That tends to generate drive a lot of the discussion.
So you don't have a specific LinkedIn group or a Facebook group. You have WhatsApp for everyone, and you also are generating what I would call the water cooler buzz across a lot of platforms. So that's an interesting answer to the question. Now, the members. Tell us a little bit about your members and what you require of membership.
Well, our members, we have 14 countries that are members of our organization. We have actually 48 members, of which 38 of those are actual firefighting organizations spread throughout those 14 countries. And 10 more are affiliated organizations. So it's organizations that are involved in fire protection or fire suppression or something in some fashion, but are not actually going to fires, if you think of it in that context. And in terms of membership, what we want to see is, and our application for membership covers this, where they're located. Obviously, we want to know how many firefighters that are a member of their organization. We'd like to know what types of calls they respond to, because fire departments, as you well know, don't just respond to fires. I've often thought it's kind of a misnomer to call them fire departments. I think we should call them all hazard departments.
Yes.
Because they respond to lots of things besides fires. We want to know what they're doing, hazmats, technical rescue, search and rescue, things like that. And we like to know how they go about distributing or meeting their own training needs and what training they have available that they can bring to the table to share with us.
Is there a way for individuals, people living in a community or visiting a community, to know how fire, I'm going to use your word, hazard safe the community is, how well trained? I've never seen anything that would say to me, if I moved into a particular county in the U.S. or anywhere in the world, I can find out the schools, I can find out even the statistics on theft, but I can't find out the statistics on firefighting safety. Is that something that does exist that I couldn't find, or something yet to be done for the future?
Actually, in the U.S., and this is not necessarily typical of all of our members of OBA, but in the U.S., since you asked, there's something called ISO, Insurance Services Office, that rates fire departments. It comes in and actually examines what their resources are, examines their records to see what kind of responses they have and things like that, and gives them a rating number. And every fire department in the United States is going to have an ISO number. So if you wanted to know where the fire department in a particular community falls on the scale, you could check out their ISO number.
Fascinating. Something to know and something that my other areas might aspire to. Now, to conclude this, I want to be a little bit more visionary. Let's go back to Lucia for a minute. Next steps. I mean, you've done so much. You've brought together so many organizations. You've created a social media network among the organizations. And, of course, you've gotten a really good solid foundation for what you want to teach. What's the next step? What is it for the future of this organization that you would like to see or are already working on?
For us, the future of our organization is actually taking fire services to the future, taking fire services to work towards the SDGs, towards the climate agenda, so towards the gender agenda. So in the coming month, we will be launching the first regional report, Women in the Fire Services of Latin America and the Caribbean, which will be for us a historical report, as it's the first time we will know how many women do we have in the fire services, what do we do, what do they do, if they are facing bias or discrimination. This is something we are working towards very strongly. Also, we are collaborating with the Metropolitan Fire Chiefs Association, which is from the USA, to implement a program to donate fire trucks to fire services in Latin America, from the US to Latin America, and also starting some collaboration committees with the CPIF, which is our European counterpart, to exchange knowledge in some strategic areas like new technologies, wildfire, hazardous materials. So for us right now, we are very focused on bringing the latest in the sector to Latin America and to modernizing, let's say, fire services for them to be closer to their communities and a better mirror of their communities.
Well, so beautiful. Now, Phil, last question for you before we make sure that Lucia tells everybody where to find the organization. But last question for you. On that same idea of the future, and Lucia was talking about best practices, talking about women, what about technology? You mentioned one of your challenges being rural areas and how long it takes and even probably to get the message that there is a fire, let alone to get to the fire. Is there any innovations in technology in firefighting or hazard control that you particularly think is part of the future?
No, I don't think we've plateaued. The fire service, I think, is one that is a traditional service, and consequently, I think sometimes people tend to look upon us as traditional, meaning opposed to progress. I think there are all kinds of things that we're looking at in the future. Better communications, for instance, on the fire ground, and that actually kind of in the United States is an outshoot of or offshoot of the events of 9/11.
Sure.
Communications weren't very good. So communications is certainly a part of it. We are looking certainly at better building smarter buildings. Part of our solution,
yes.
Part of our solution, I think, to fire suppression and fire control is buildings that simply don't have fires, or if they do, they're much more compartmentalized and controlled. So part of our solution lies in standards and codes going forward and building smarter buildings. Part of it relates or is going to be dependent upon smarter application of extinguishing agents, not just water, but extinguishing agents that are more effective and are more compact. So the water supply I mentioned earlier isn't so much of an issue because you've got things that can deal with the fire that are much more compact. So there are lots of things out there. In fact, I think that the boundaries of it are really limited only by our imaginations.
Fantastic. I was at a structural engineering conference, and they were talking about just that. And interestingly, it was in the area of 9/11, and it was very, very emotional, as well as very, very scientific and technical. So let us wrap up now. Lucia, how do we find your organization for those who want to ask you questions because they're members of GNEC and they love what you're doing and they'd like to emulate it, or other potential members that you haven't ferreted out yet? Where do we find the organization?
And we will love to hear from all of them. We are at www.bomberosamericanos.org. And in social media, you can find us at bomberosova in Instagram, in Twitter, in YouTube, in LinkedIn, and in Facebook. So we are hoping to get all your messages, and we're very eager to get to know everyone from the other side of this podcast.
So thank you both so much. This has been so important that we talk to people who are experts in collaboration, one of the pillars of GNEC. And for everybody else, get out there, kids, and make it happen. This is Adrienne Berg saying goodbye for now from On the Ground. See you soon.